Hello and welcome to this Dobbies podcast, which is all about the Horticultural Trades Association's Keep Britain Growing campaign. I'm Louise Midgley, garden writer of the Sunday Express, and today I'm joined by the lovely and very knowledgeable Pippa Greenwood, television and radio presenter and horticultural manager at the HTA. Hello, Pippa.
Hello, Louise.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about your role at the HTA?
My official job title is the horticulture manager. So basically it's everything to do with horticulture. And my main sort of role there is with the growers. So all those fantastic people across the country who grow all the gorgeous plants that we can buy either direct from them or from our garden centres. So my fingers are in lots of different pies when it comes to what I do at the HTA. But yes, everything to do with plants, really. And obviously helping with campaigns like the Keep Britain Growing campaign. And also because I've got more than a passing interest in pests and diseases and things. I'm also very heavily involved in the sort of plant health and biosecurity side of things. So anything to do with plants, that's me.
So Pippa, can we start off with you telling us a little bit about the Keep Britain Growing campaign and why it's so good for us all?
Well, do you know, it's good for us all because gardening is good for us. There's been a huge surge in interest from everything from the real basics of gardening to much more complex stuff. And what we at the HTA wanted to do was ensure that everyone that's taken up gardening or has found themselves venturing into the sort of higher echelons of gardening has got the opportunity to get a bit of help and make sure that they carry on gardening, hence Keep Britain Growing. We're setting up as a part of the website where you can go for some really good information, and we're getting growers and broadcasters and all sorts of people to feed that information that they've got onto those sites. And we've sort of divided it into months of the year and parts of the garden so that you can go and find out what you should be doing with your flower beds in November or whichever the month might be that you're taking a look. And the idea is it's there as a sort of helping hand, really.
Sure. So it's a pointer for each month. You can just have a little sort of reference guide to see what you should be doing, depending on, you know, the size of your garden or what sort of garden you have.
You're absolutely right. Because, I mean, all this kicked off really with the September campaign, which is Million Planting Moments. And we have a week where we're trying to get at least a million people planting something in their garden, whether they're planting for the first time or they've been planting for the last 75 or more years. It doesn't matter. We want to get everyone planting.
And you know, to me, September is the beginning of the gardening year because all the conditions are just perfect. You don't have to worry about watering because you're almost guaranteed to have rain, and the ground is going to be relatively warm below. So plants will get a good root growth going, and a good root system will support the top growth in the end. So people who are new to gardening might think it's coming to an end, but actually it's a great time to start.
It's ironic, isn't it? Because it's sort of all upside down, because everyone thinks of the beginning of the gardening year being the sort of Easter weekend. And as you say, exactly, this is the time to make your gardening and your planting actually quite easy because soil's still got a bit of warmth. And as you say, there's quite often more than enough moisture about. And it gives plants the chance to sort of get their feet down without the stresses and strains of a really hot period of weather, which puts quite a toll on them when they're young and getting established. So perfect time for planting. And then, of course, we're not just talking all the obvious things like trees and shrubs and hedging and climbers and herbaceous perennials and roses. It's also the bulb planting season starts now. So a great opportunity to add some spring colour in your garden by planting bulbs now too.
Fantastic. Absolutely. And I mean, rainwater is the best kind of water to water a plant in any case, I feel. So if you plant a lot of things in spring and you've got, and we have a heat wave, you've got to keep watering with tap water, which perhaps isn't quite so beneficial. Pippa, what evidence have you seen to show that more people are now taking up gardening as a hobby?
I can't say that I'm standing at the entrance to nurseries and garden centres with a little clicker counting how many people are coming in. But if you look at the statistics coming back from nurseries and garden centres and any mail order outlet as well, of course, there are a lot more people and a lot more of the newer gardeners. As I say, I can't say I've been standing there counting them, but it is really great and everything is pointing to that direction. And a lot of people are reporting really good sales figures for the time of year.
That's true. I know the seed manufacturers have done it. Vegetable seeds, a lot of them actually run out. So they must have sold so many more than ever before, which is fantastic news. If people eat their own freshly grown vegetables, there's nothing quite like it. But why do you think gardening has increased in popularity? What do you think sparked it off? I know people perhaps had more time at home, but it really has had this massive surge. What do you think started that off this year?
You're absolutely right. People had more time. And I think people also found it as a really good way of doing something as a family. If you happen to have a family, gardening is great because it's something you can do with any generation that happens to live in the household, or if it's not under lockdown, you can bring into the household. So you could have grandparents, parents, and kids of just about any age could be out there, whether they're pulling weeds, planting, whatever they might be doing. It is a great activity to do together. Almost everybody finds it really enticing. It's just getting people to start, isn't it? And I think people had a go because maybe they didn't know what else to do. You know, they'd used up the jigsaws, they'd watched all the box sets, they wanted a bit of air. You go out into the garden, you get fresh air. There's something wonderful about the colour green, isn't there? I think it's documented as being calming and lovely. And certainly if I'm wound up about something and I get to go outside, within a few minutes, I feel nicer and happier. And then you realise what a great way it is to spend your time. You get fresh air, you get exercise, and then this amazing sense of achievement. And if you grow something that's edible, whether it's veg or fruit, I mean, doesn't that just feel great? So I think there's a huge feel-good factor. We know it's good for well-being and mental health, but there is just also that lovely feeling of, haven't I done well, which is something we all need.
Yes, I think so. And a garden never stands still, does it? It's forever changing. So it's the perfect place if you have enough space, or even if you have a small space, this doesn't necessarily affect it, to have a new project, always have a new project on the go. You know, if you've got a small space, use the verticals, or, you know, put some new raised beds in somewhere. And there's always something that can be changed because plants do change and they have to be accommodated in different ways. And I love the fact that that gardening has no age boundaries. Everyone can feel included. It really is. That's a fantastic point that you make about that, because it does mean the family can come together. And of course, the weather was wonderful in the south, at least this year. It was wonderful for a few months. Not so good recently, but it has been wonderful.
I think it was actually too hot in parts, so for a good part of the year.
I think there was a bit of a north-south divide at some parts of the year, because I did see some torrential rain in Manchester and different places when we were having quite hot weather. And I did think we were on the lucky end of the weather for that particular period. You're based in the south, I believe, and so am I. Was, you know, tremendously good summer. So the next thing I was going to ask you is why you think, on the whole, gardening is so good for us mentally and physically.
I think it's great because it's something you can use to your advantage in terms of making yourself feel happier, more chirpy, or whatever it might be, at any time. It's not a case of, oh, you have to go and book an appointment, you have to go and book a squash court, you have to go and decide when you're doing something, you don't have to get in your car to go and do it. Okay, obviously, if you're going to go and buy some lovely new plants or whatever and go pop down to the garden centre or the nursery, you can do it pretty well spontaneously. And you're out there, you're in the fresh air, you see things growing, you see things changing, you're surrounded by the most amazing smells. And I think I'm not someone that's into perfume, but when it comes to perfumes in the garden, and even just the smell that you get when you get rain after a period of dry weather, it's lovely. And the tastes as well. To me, gardening also always needs to include something edible. So if you can have fruit and veg and so forth, then it's just so lovely to smell, to see, to eat, to feel. You know, there are textures out there, you're out in the open air. And I just think most humans, and certainly me, respond better to the great outdoors than they do to being clamped inside.
For sure. So, I mean, what other hobby would stimulate all the senses? I don't really think anyone could find anything quite so amazing as the sense and the sounds of birdsong. And there's always something to see. And the sense, when you're talking about it, it's not just flowers that smell lovely. The aromatic foliage of like Choisya tonata, some of the lovely shrubs that we have, when you prune them, they smell absolutely amazing. So, yes, you can see why it's an uplifting experience. And what about within the community? There must be huge benefits for people there too.
Well, the great thing is, I think you can do it on your own. You can do it with one other person. You can be out in the garden with the whole family, or it can be a community exercise, as you say. And there are some lovely community gardens or spaces within communities with all sorts of people, all shapes and sizes, all joining in as and when they can. It's a really good way of making your environment look better and then making you feel better. And it also brings people together, and it brings, you know, it's a bit like on an allotment, you'll get people of all types and all ages there together, swapping information, swapping plants, swapping stories, giving a bit of help, probably giving the odd bit of criticism too, but really enjoying it together. And that is so important because, you know, it's scarily easy to be shut away. There's a wonderful campaign from DEFRA at the moment called Healthy Plants, Healthy Minds. And that is just it. You keep your plants healthy, and then you're going to find that you also help yourself to feel healthier and to be healthier too. And if you're producing edible things, they are really good for you as well. Homegrown veg, salads, fruit, you know, what more could you ask?
There will be lots of gardeners who've taken up gardening as a hobby over this last few months. What advice can you give them if they're struggling to know what to do next?
Well, I think the first thing is to remember that anybody that starts out on something can't be expected to know everything. And, you know, if you ask me to look into the back end of a computer, I would just simply walk off in the other direction because I know I couldn't cope. But if I could get good information, maybe I could cope. And I think that's the thing. Don't feel embarrassed or ashamed about not knowing something. Gardeners are the most communicative, friendly bunch on the whole you could ever hope to meet. So whether you've got a friend or a neighbour or a relative who's a more accomplished gardener than yourself, ask them. Go to sources of information, you know, like our Keep Britain Growing campaign. That's a source of information. Watch the television gardening programmes. Listen to us on Gardeners Question Time. Read gardening magazines. You can soak up lots of information all the time very easily. But also, don't forget to ask. And if you go into your local garden centre or your nursery, the people there should know about the plants they're selling and they can give you some advice. And if you know you've got a really tricky spot in your garden and you've planted several things over the years and each time they've sort of struggled, shall we say, even if they haven't died, they haven't done what you wanted them to, there's often a right plant for that particular place. And it's just a case of getting some help, and then you'll put something in there that's the right thing and it'll do really well. There's very few things in life that always go right the first time. That includes gardening. So you're going to have the odd disaster or the odd failure. I mean, my sweet corn this year was just really weird. I still can't work out what was wrong with it. Last year, it was absolutely gorgeous. And next year, I'm assuming it's going to be gorgeous again.
You do learn through your mistakes, don't you? I mean, even experienced gardeners learn through their mistakes, and you've just got to get your hands dirty and have a go. And once you've made a mistake, then perhaps you'll know not to do it again. And then that's the way of learning. But just learn a little bit at a time and your knowledge will grow. And you're right, just ask away. It's fantastic. With September and autumn in general being such a great time to plant and to get things organised in the garden, what specific jobs can you advise inexperienced gardeners to do at the moment?
I think the first thing is hopefully your lawn is slowing down its growth slightly. So maybe less time needs to be spent cutting the grass, which is great as far as I'm concerned. I love real lawns, wouldn't have a fake one, but they do take a bit of time. So that's less than normal. If you've got hedges, then for many people, this is quite a good time to be starting to cut hedges because there really shouldn't be birds nesting. And it's quite nice to get them tidied up before there's any risk of frosts. I think with things like flower beds and borders, it's quite a good time to see if you can eke out the period of time that they look lovely for a little bit longer. So nipping out there with a carrier bag or a bucket or something and taking off all the dead heads, doing some serious removal of anything that looks a bit grotty, can often make things look better. It's a bit like vacuuming the carpet. It kind of makes the rest of the house look a bit better and doesn't take too long. It's my ideal sort of housework. And then, of course, adding to them, because there are a lot of flower beds in people's gardens, which look lovely in the summer months. And then towards the autumn, they start to go downhill a bit because plants are maybe dying back or they're just simply not so much of real interest. So go to your local garden centre or nursery and take a look at what's available. And you'll invariably find some really stunning looking plants for whatever time of year it is, which are looking good then. And that will give you the opportunity of adding things in for that particular time of year. So I'd always say, don't do all your plant shopping in one go, shop at different times of the year. And as you said, this is the best time for planting pretty well everything. So you've got a double advantage there. So fill in some gaps, do some tidying up. Don't forget that everything is better with bulbs underneath. Whether you're planting up containers for your front doorstep or your terrace or your patio, or whether you're adding plants to a flower bed or starting a new flower bed, it's great if you can pop some spring flowering bulbs underneath. And most spring flowering bulbs, you know, even the classics like daffodils and so forth, can be planted at this time of year. And wait until, I would say, back end of October, really, for things like the tulips. They do a bit better. But mostly you can get those in there now. And then come the spring, there's this gorgeous surprise when you get flashes of colour and maybe perfume popping in amongst your hanging baskets, your patio tubs, or your flower beds. So an awful lot to do. And then, of course, if you've got a boring fence or a shed that really looks pretty ugly, why not cover it with a climber, or at least hide it partly with a climber? You may need to put up some trellis or some straining wires for it to be trained onto. But a climber is just gorgeous. You could have something that looks lovely at this time of year. You could have something that's going to be in flower in the spring. The choice is yours, but go and take a look, find out a bit about the plants, check the healthy, and then get planting.
Yes, I popped to my local garden centre last week, and I was surprised at how many amazing perennials are still, you know, in full flower. In fact, last year I went to Nyman's in September, and they've got a wonderful late summer flowering border, and it was just absolutely spectacular. The Nyphophias and asters. There's so many flowers that are actually out at the moment and will continue to be in flower for the next 2 or 3 weeks at least. And nereens are coming out. I mean, they're just spectacular. Love nereens.
Things like the Japanese anemones too. There's a really wacky one, and actually mine is the buds are just waiting to burst, called Frilly Knickers, which won our virtual new plant award visitors vote this year. And I've got one, which I'm very excited about. And it's lovely, isn't it? It's really wacky. And I've got some of the classic pink ones around the corner, and they look stunning at this time of year. So yes, go and see what's available. Do some garden visiting. Have a little sneak look over somebody else's front wall or fence and see what they've got that's looking good. And certainly, you know, as you just said, and I was saying earlier, if you go to your local nursery and garden centre, they will have some stunning looking plants for the time of year.
For sure. And I'm so into wildlife, so I just have to say my little bit. Try and get something in flower for as many months of the year as possible. And actually, if you think that's impossible, it certainly isn't, because there are loads of plants that flower in the winter time. There's lots of very highly scented shrubs, winter honeysuckle, that are trying to attract pollinators. Try and get something in your garden that's in flower at any time of the year, which is so beneficial for bees and butterflies still at this time of year. We may be in September, but they're still on the wing.
Yeah, I think wildlife's so important, because, you know, talking about how a garden makes you feel better. Actually, I love watching something, say, taking nectar from a flower or a butterfly landing on a plant. It's gorgeous, isn't it? I actually am rather fond of woodlice. I know a lot of people hate them, yeah, but I think they're lovely. They're very busy little scuttlers. Yes. And I think all those things, they add another dimension. But you also need to do it for their point of view, because we need wildlife. And I'm not just talking pollinators. So we've got our fruits forming in our gardens and for our crops. Everything out there plays a role, as well as being lovely to have in your garden. So I totally agree. And I think there are so many good sources of information about wildlife gardening. And I mean, I'm a great fan of the Wildlife Gardening Forum, and their website's got lots of information on it and ways that you can help wildlife. And you know, as you say, something in flower for as many months of the year. Don't be over tidy. Little piles of leaves and so forth are really useful if you're a small scuttly thing and you need somewhere to be protected from the worst of the weather.
Yes, overwintering. And actually, it's when you're in the garden, when you're actually gardening, you will have a butterfly that lands right above you, or a bird, a robin might maybe, you know, hopping around where you are, or a bird might land just above you, and you see it at close quarters. And that sort of interaction, that wildlife experience, is just second to none. It just can't be replaced by anything, I don't think. I love it. And Pippa, how can people get involved in the Keep Britain Growing campaign? And what can they do when they visit the website?
Once you're there, take a look at the information that's going to be uploaded under the various months. And as I say, it's sort of divided into parts of the garden as well. So if you're feeling in the right frame of mind to want to do something with, say, your fruit and veg plot, or the fruit and veg you're growing in amongst your flowers, whichever it might be, then look at that bit. If you're wanting to do something to your lawn and it's a suitable time of year, there'll hopefully be some advice up there about that as well. So it's a case of just having a bit of a look around and seeing what's there, and then getting out into your own garden and taking a long, hard look at it and thinking, where could this be better and what could I do now? And if you know what you do at certain times of year, like autumn is a fantastic time for planting most things. Obviously, you need to sort of use your common sense a little bit as well. And if it's absolutely hammering down with rain and you've got a really heavy clay soil and it's more like a quagmire than a garden soil, then maybe you do wait a little bit. So look at the information that's out there, look out of the window, get out into the garden and do what you logically can. And you know, I'm also somebody that's very keen to say, if it's absolutely vile weather and it's pelting down with rain, there isn't actually a sin in just going inside and making some plans or ordering some plants or choosing plants that you might go and buy. You don't have to garden in all weathers in order to feel like a gardener. You do it to suit yourself in the time you've got available. In our previous house, I planted almost all the bulbs in the front garden using the security light because I was always at work, it seemed. It was always dark. So I got home and put some light on the flower beds and you could get some bulbs planted. So regardless of what your neighbours think, do it to suit you.
Yes, you do have to. And I think the great thing about gardening is, you know, all individuals are very different and there are different elements in gardening. You know, as you said, from growing edibles to maybe having a cutting garden, or you could have a wildlife haven, or you can have your own individual themed garden. You know, people like to have tropical gardens. You can put your own stamp on it and make it yours. You don't have to conform to what other people do or what your neighbours do. Make it your own and make it individual. And I think that's so important. And then you'll really love it because it'll be a reflection of your own personality and you'll want to spend time in it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Pippa. It's wonderful to have an insight into the Keep Britain Growing campaign, and your useful gardening tips and advice are invaluable. But sadly, that's all we have time for today. Visit dobbies.com or hta.org.uk for more podcasts and oodles of help and advice on gardening. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next Dobbies podcast, which will be coming soon.